pass to our next presenter, Professor Andrew Sankton from the University of Western Ontario, which is actually the University of, what is it called now?
University of Western?
Right. Western University.
The official name is still University of Western Ontario, but the brand is Western.
Right. From the brand of Western, Andrew Sankton will speak to what can Montreal learn from the Greater London Authority. Professor Sankton is interested in all aspects of urban politics and local government, but especially municipal institutions and boundaries in large metropolitan areas. He also has a long-standing interest in electoral boundaries at all levels of government and the constitutional politics of allocating seats in the Canadian House of Commons to the various provinces. Okay.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to be speaking in English. A little later on, I'm going to give a bit more autobiographical information than you're probably ever going to want, which will explain my linguistic relation to to what I'm talking about here. First of all, I want to say that I don't have any prepared paper. I don't even have data of the kind that Eric had. When I was first asked to talk at this conference, I was very pleased with the idea to come back to my native city. I had the idea that seemed like a good idea at the time, sitting in my office in London, Ontario, that I would throw out a couple of ideas about the governance of Montreal. As I say, it seemed like a good idea sitting in my office. I'm not so sure if it's such a great idea now, but I don't have any alternative except to press ahead, so that's what I'm going to do. I should point out that in case some of you were worried that I'm comparing Montreal to London, Ontario, in fact, that's not the case. I thought it would be a bit parochial to point out that the Greater London Authority is London, England, not London, Ontario. So that's the comparison. The other thing I want to say in terms of introduction is that until quite recently, I wasn't sure really what the audience was for this session. I thought we might have a whole pile of municipal experts from the ENRS, or because there are a lot of them in Montreal, and I even thought we might have some municipal politicians taking some time off from the campaigning. So I realized that we don't have, as I understand it, a whole bunch of people with a lot of technical expertise about municipal government. I've found in my career, which is a typical academic kind of career, you learn more and more about less and less, and so I've get very much involved in sort of technical questions about municipal structures, municipal government, and I spent a lot of time teaching things about municipal government to municipal employees in Ontario. So I hope this is going to be pitched at something that's going to be of interest to people. But if you came here to talk about urban creativity, which is, after all, the title of the overall session, I'm not entirely convinced that some of these questions about municipal structures are at the heart of issues about creativity, the kinds of things that we heard about Richard Florida this morning. This is not what I'm talking about. But I do believe that municipal governments, of course, are very important in providing an environment in which creativity and innovation can take place. And finally, that is all I really want to say about in terms of introduction. We could be talking about municipal policy for creativity, and there's a lot written about that, but I still think that, if municipalities plan for a humane environment, if they have roads that work, public transit systems that work, and if it's done honestly, without corruption, that this is, this is what we should be asking for from our municipal governments. I do have this PowerPoint. I didn't do this so that I'd have many slides like this one. I mainly did it because I have some maps to show. This guides me through the first part here. I want to point out, first of all, that when I'm talking about governance issues, I'm talking about the governance of metropolitan areas, not the particular municipal structure of the city of Montreal, although I will come to that. But the basic issue that I'm interested in is how do you govern multi-municipal metropolitan areas? And I'm suggesting that there's kind of two fundamental ways of approaching this, just like there are in so many academic disputes and issues. You either look at your case as a typical one, or you look at it as an exception. And so I'm saying those are the kind of two ways of looking at Montreal. And the first way is the way I, when I first came to the issue of Montreal, I said, I want to look at Montreal in comparison to Toronto, Winnipeg, other American cities, and explain metropolitan governance in Montreal in comparison to that broader literature about the governance of metropolitan areas. The other approach, of course, is that Montreal is somehow a special case, and it's special mostly historically because of linguistic issues, because of the French-English cleavage, because of the long history of Montreal. My approach is the second one, and that I find with reference to the sort of more, the scholars in Montreal who do my kind of work, that they are much more likely to take the first one. They want to go to other conferences in North America and explain sort of what's happening in Montreal and placing it in the context of the North American literature. And I understand exactly why they're doing that. That's sort of what I would have done. If I hadn't had a graduate supervisor at the doctoral level when I was studying in England, who sort of pushed me on this thing. So what makes Montreal special? Why do you want to study Montreal? And I said, well, I come from Montreal. That's the part about autobiography. You know, I think it's interesting. At the time I was starting, the Montreal Urban Community had just been set up. I wanted to look at how that came to be. And I would read all this stuff about the other cities, and I wanted to put Montreal in this context. So we talked about Montreal as an island. That makes it sort of different. It's an older city. That makes it different. But he kept pushing, and he said, well, you know, you're an English-speaking Montrealer. Doesn't that make any difference to you? Don't you see anything in that? And I said, well, yeah, but I can't write about that. There's nothing in the literature about the effect of language on the organization of metropolitan government in North America. And my supervisor, said, who was an expert on English local government but knew Canada, said, well, of course you can write about that. That's what you need for a PhD thesis, some kind of thing that you can do in an original sense. And so, although I've gone a long way, done a lot of different things other than look at Montreal, that's certainly how my academic career started. And I would have loved to have stayed in Montreal to pursue these studies, but the way the academic market was, I got a job in London, Ontario, and I've been there for 35 years. And that explains why I'm speaking in English. When I taught for 3 years at Marianopolis College, when I was working on my PhD, I thought my French was getting pretty good, but you don't get too much opportunity to talk French in London. The biggest opportunity is actually when Radio Canada calls up. They want to find somebody who can say something in French about some issue, into whether Rob Ford is taking drugs or not. But really, really, there's no other opportunities. So that's the end of the autobiography. So Montreal is pretty unique. It's the only metropolitan area that I'm aware of that has experienced de-amalgamation. My explanation, we don't have to explore that in detail, but I think ultimately it comes down to language. I'm totally aware that other municipalities outside Montreal de-amalgamated. You know, this is not the place to score, you know, little academic points, but one of the surprising things about my Francophone colleagues who study Montreal, when they're gone to these international conferences is to say, oh, Montreal had a big amalgamation in 2000, and then there was a de-amalgamation, and then they sort of go on and talk about what happened. Well, both the amalgamation and the de-amalgamation are incomprehensible to Americans. They don't understand how either of those things could have happened. So the whole, and Torontonians, of course, can't understand how the de-amalgamation happened. The incredible story of the Montreal reorganization is that the policy of amalgamation turned out to have incredibly more fragmentation and complexity than we started with. And this is a story that is almost impossible to tell in English Canada. I've tried, but people just can't believe it. But I think it needs more explanation, even if people in Montreal are completely bored with it or think it's kind of silly. I mean, it's a remarkable story of unintended consequences. Now, I do think there's an interesting parallel with London, England, and it's because of the existence of the agglomeration council, the boroughs, the de-amalgamated municipalities. It means, in fact, that Montreal is close to being more like Greater London than it is to any other North American city, in my view. And that's primarily because Greater London has no dominant central city. It's comprised of 32 boroughs and the tiny city of London, and it has a Greater London mayor and assembly. And as I said, Montreal, I think, is potentially close to that structure. It's just a little bit more pushing and it would be there. When I say Montreal has no dominant central city, that's because, notwithstanding the campaign for mayor of Montreal, as I understand things, and I might have it wrong, the mayoralty of Montreal is primarily about being the mayor of the agglomeration council, because the actual work of the Montreal City Council is not very much. The boroughs are important, and the agglomeration council is important, but the institution in the middle is not so important. So this is the map of Greater London, and you'll see there's no there as in terms of the central city. There's the city of London. Even the city of Westminster, which is, you know, where tourists go and everything, is not that dominant in the overall scheme of things. Each of those boroughs is a corporation. It's a municipality, a few hundred thousand people. They deliver a wide range of municipal services, including education, personal social services, things that our municipalities don't do. But they look after most of the local services, the local zoning. We heard from Anik Germain, mentioned Boris Johnson this morning. He is the mayor of the Greater London Authority, but he doesn't actually have control over the whole range of municipal services. It's the strategic transportation kinds of services that the Greater London Authority has, it looks after. Now, I'm placing Montreal structurally in relation to sort of Anglo-Saxon municipal government. It's true that arrondissement is the term used for the boroughs in, but again, we can have a big debate about this. I don't think there's much very profitable to be gained from trying to connect the Montreal municipal system to the French system, because the whole institutional structure of it comes from the Anglo-Saxon tradition. And there is quite a history in Montreal of trying to mimic, in a way, the greater developments in Greater London. And I'm not trying to be an imperialist Anglo here with pushing forward English things. I have no interest in that. I just think it's part of the history of Montreal that the original, that there were original sort of rational, so-called rationally based proposals for borough systems of one kind or another. And the first, there was some before 1928 from a Francophone geographer, but the one that I liked was the Montreal Municipal Service Bureau argued that Montreal needed a borough system because it would be British in character and Canadian in spirit. That was a, that was an argument in favor of the system in 1928. This proposal went nowhere, of course. Curiously, Westmount, City of Westmount, formally proposed a borough system in the early 1970s. This was after the Montreal Urban Community was created. It was in the original law that there had to be a, that within 5 years after 1969, the municipal boundaries had to be restructured. And so everybody was coming up with different plans. One of the more serious ones was this, where, of course, number two there is kind of a greater Westmount. You can see that people were thinking about different ways of structuring the governance of Montreal. Just to show that it wasn't only Anglos who were doing this, the Bédard report called PAC 2000, which, the vice chair of which was Jean-Pierre Collin, the distinguished urban historian at ENRS. They had various maps showing different boundaries. This is Isle de Montreal with three municipalities, and this is a version with five. They were arguing for restructured municipalities and then a big metropolitan authority for the whole metropolitan area that would be much more powerful than the Communauté Métropolitaine de Montréal, to which we referred earlier on. This, of course, was the result in the real world. This is the 2006 map of Montreal after the de-amalgamations. The dark blue is the city of Montreal divided into boroughs, and the light blue are the de-amalgamated municipalities that are part of the agglomeration council. And if there was ever an example, as I said earlier on, of unintended consequences, this is surely it, that a plan, a law passed by the National Assembly to unify unify the government of the Island of Montreal would have a result that looked like this. Now, the body that governs the Island of Montreal is the Agglomeration Council. This is one of the few institutions ever designed by anybody that was deliberately designed to be unattractive. And I say that seriously, because the idea of the Agglomeration Council was to tell voters in the de-amalgamation referenda that if you vote for de-amalgamation, you are going to be stuck with a terrible institution. So you better not vote for that. You better vote to be a borough. And notwithstanding that, many of the smaller English majority municipalities did vote for de-amalgamation. It's completely controlled by the majority of the City of Montreal. And in my, as I said, in my view, that's why the City of Montreal election that's coming up is important. It's important because it determines who controls the agglomeration council, which controls transit, big infrastructure, police, that kind of thing. As I said at the beginning, I think Montreal could look very much like Greater London if the boroughs were incorporated as full-fledged municipal incorporations. In other words, they became municipalities. There's a report on the funding of these boroughs that basically argues for that. In order for them to be more financially responsible, there needs to be more direct accountability in the borough system. That's not to say that, you know, poor boroughs has to raise all their money locally. There is and should continue to be a kind of equalization system. It can't go on like this, I think, is basically the argument. If Montreal were to be like Greater London, there would be a direct election of the agglomeration mayor, because currently the mayor of Montreal is the head of that. And I would argue for a small agglomeration council keeping all the other councils as they are. I mean, they can say whatever the people at the local level want to decide. So like the mayor of Greater London, the mayor of the Montreal Agglo would be the city's political leader, especially because he could remain chair of the CMM. More of that in a minute. This is the Communauté Métropolitaine, which we talked about earlier. So even, of course, I'm just talking about this area here, but the CMM takes the whole all of that. This is not like unlike Greater London either, because even though Greater London has Mayor Johnson and the mayor of Greater London, it's still just a tiny area of the real London city region, which can be defined in various ways, but that's one way of defining it. So that's just another way in which Montreal is somewhat like Greater London. Getting back to my point about the language issue at the beginning, for all kinds of reasons, I don't think anybody wants any big institutional reorganization in Montreal. Nobody wants to start redrawing boundaries. What I failed to mention when I had the maps of the different boroughs and the different plans, the Westmont plan and the PAC 2000 plan, was that those all had the effect of changing linguistic majorities within certain municipalities. And that was not going to fly. There was going to be no government in Quebec that would place the residents of Saint-Genevieve or another Francophone municipality in the West Island into a dominant West Island municipality. And that kind of, a dominant English West Island municipality. And that kind of thing got replicated in other places. So that's one more reason why it would not be a good idea to reopen the boundary issue. What I'm suggesting wouldn't change a single boundary, and it creates no new political offices. I saw a poll saying that Montrealers favor having fewer municipal politicians. I think if you took a poll anywhere in the world, you'd probably find that would be people's response. But anyway, this doesn't do that. It probably reduces it. But the tricky symbolic issue, let's say that by some miracle everybody said, oh, Sancton, this is a terrific plan, we're going to do it. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that would happen. But the trickiest thing, what would you call this new thing? I would actually be in favor of calling it the City of Montreal. Then you'd have all the boroughs, including the de-amalgamated municipalities, would be part of this new City of Montreal. And the mayor of the Agglo would be not the mayor of such a, well, maybe it sounds better in French, but anyway, it wouldn't be the mayor of the agglomeration of Montreal. It would be the mayor of the City of Montreal. But of course, the tricky thing about that is that there are some difficult symbolic issues about that. But if you kept the boundaries of the de-amalgamated municipalities the same and kept the boroughs the same, if people are happy with that, with the boroughs within the City of Montreal, then I don't see why this shouldn't happen. So that's my modest proposal.
We have 15 minutes for questions, modest or immodest.
Good afternoon. I'm Tzvi Levy. I'm an urbanist. It's very interesting, the parallels between London and Montreal. But the one elephant in the room is Quebec versus the UK, and the relationship between Montreal and Quebec and London versus the UK. And London basically leads the UK, whereas here we have a power struggle. Who is leading Quebec? There are fundamentally different economic systems. Quebec is an extractive, resource-based economy. Montreal, you could say, is the mercantile hub of Quebec, but that's not where the wealth of the province is coming from. So this is an issue that we need to grasp with. So if you can comment to that.
Well, my only comment about that was the Parti Québécois didn't take that position when they were in favor of when they passed a law creating the amalgamated City of Montreal. It wasn't an issue then, and so it's already more decentralized than that. This power is already more fragmented. I would be much more sympathetic to your view, your analysis, if you were thinking about some kind of new institution such as was advocated by the Bédard report, or any kind of institution that would take the whole Montreal city region and create a some kind of single political entity out of that, so a directly elected mayor of the CMM really would be a force to contend with, and I wouldn't expect Quebec to do that, but I don't see why they couldn't contend with a directly elected mayor of the island of Montreal. After all, Mayor Tremblay was elected as the directly elected mayor of all of the city of Montreal the first time.
I'm not talking about this, just in terms of ability. I'm referring more to ability to control their destiny and their priorities. Quebec or Montreal doesn't have any direct source of wealth. Everything comes from Quebec, whereas London is really the economic motor of the UK. Like Montreal is the commercial engine of Quebec, but most of the wealth of Quebec is actually resource-based. So like there's this, like Quebec is really doesn't have an interest in promoting a strong Montreal.
But I have a better understanding of what you're saying. All I would say is that presumably Quebec does have an interest in the good governance of Montreal, and that's the only question that I was addressing. I'm not talking about getting more wealth or changing the taxation system or anything. I'm just talking about a system that works.
That would be nice.
Hi, I'm Natalia. I see that the problem seems to be axing on the language issue a lot in the governance, and a lot of people either don't communicate or don't understand each other because of the divide. And, I would like to see the city one day be a bilingual city, but I've noticed that they added Montreal is a unilingual francophone city into the charter of the city of Montreal. And I don't think that that change that has been there before. So my question is, do you know where that sentence came from?
The sentence is actually not Montreal is a unilingual French city. It is Montreal is a French-speaking city is the English version of the first section of the law. I would say that the reason that was in the law was because the Montreal Amalgamation of 2000 had the effect of reducing the proportion of Francophones in the new city, and the Parti Québécois was very sensitive to that and wanted to make sure that everybody understood that Montreal was still going to be a French-speaking city, notwithstanding the fact that some of the boroughs would continue to be classified as bilingual.
Andrew, when you say that Montreal is unworkable, I think we all kind of intuitively know what you mean. But I wonder what exactly you mean, right? Is it that there's a lack of clear lines of accountability which allows for things like corruption, or is it that we can't get services delivered effectively because of fragmentation? What exactly do you mean by
that's
more
good,
effective?
Good question. First of all, I don't think that municipal government can be made simple so that everybody can understand how all the services are delivered. I mean, cities are messy places. Different services are bound to have different geographical areas. Even people's, you know, when people use the term Montreal or Toronto, for that matter, I mean, you don't know exactly what area you're talking about. So it's going to be messy. So I'm not trying to argue that you can make it simple. What I am saying is, by any standards, the current situation in Montreal is almost incomprehensible, even to people who've made their whole career trying to understand how it works. You've got the Communauté Métropolitaine de Montréal. In some of the rural areas, you've got Municipalité Régionale du Comté. You've got you've got municipalities within those MRCs. On the island of Montreal, you've got the city of Montreal, which sort of has three juridical personalities. I don't know if I can use that term with a law professor, multiple law professors in the room, but it's got kind of three levels to it. It's got the agglomeration council doesn't exist as a legal entity. it's the city of Montreal, but it's got a different council. You've got the city of Montreal itself, the council there, which really doesn't, as far as I can see, do have any responsibility to do anything other than to funnel money to the boroughs and to pay off the debt, and then to decide what the city of Montreal's position is going to be on in the deliberations of the agglomeration council. Then you've got the boroughs of the city of Montreal, which also don't have a legal personality, which are staffed by employees of the city of Montreal, but which have the authority to levy different taxes. They have a person called a mayor running it. I mean, trying to explain people outside that the mayor of Lachine isn't really the mayor of a municipality, it's a hard thing to do. And these boroughs have different policies, as everybody knows, about snow removal and zoning. I know it's a big issue in the plateau about traffic movements and stuff. There's always going to be conflict about, you know, which part of municipal government does what. But the complexity in Montreal is not manufactured by the complexity of the services. It's manufactured by the complexity of the political negotiations and the political happenstance that resulted from all this amalgamation stuff. So all I'm trying to do is have a sort of a minimum level of clarity so that people would know that there's an authority that looks after the island, and everybody gets to vote for those people. Everybody has their own municipality. It's like a de-amalgamated municipality or a borough. And those people who are running that, they're in charge of the services for that. And there would still be conflict. There'd still be battles. But there would be a possibility of understanding who was responsible for what.
Charming.
I wonder if there are particular challenges or inefficacies in London, England, that we should also learn from or watch out for, that are particular to the kind of the history and traditions and interactions in London itself. Because here, in a sense, when we're looking to the Greater London Authority, we're necessarily getting quite a kind of a simple bird's eye view, yeah. And then saying, okay, why don't we learn from that governance structure? But there must also be interesting and specific challenges that come from the identity of London as a city.
That's a good question. There's conflict between the outer suburbs and the inner suburbs. There's conflict about allocation of resources. As you know, there's party politics, I almost said real party politics, but Conservative and Labour Party run candidates in those elections, and when the boundaries were originally drawn for that, it was considered to be a sort of a conservative gerrymander to make sure that there would be a conservative majority for the whole Greater London Council. Labour has been able to win from time to time, which is why Margaret Thatcher closed down the original version of it. And the other thing is these boroughs in London, probably all of them have bigger populations than the boroughs for Montreal here. With the possible exception of the Côte-des-Neiges NDG borough. But as I said, the boroughs in Montreal would be actually doing much less in terms of providing services because they wouldn't be looking after child protection or public health or most importantly, education. I mean, these boroughs run the education system. If anybody were to look seriously at this question, and I don't pretend that I have, answering your question would be an absolutely fundamental first step. What is it that what are the real problems in London, and how would we see the same thing in Montreal?
Questions.